we went out to say, look, we've got a product here that we think, you know, just makes it a no-brainer compared to any other products on the marketplace. And we had thousands of businesses from the largest in Ireland to the smallest all signed up in the space of 8 weeks.
How's it going? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The Entrepreneur Experiment reveals the secrets and systems world-class founders use to build their business, their body, and their brain. Today, we're talking to Keelan Lennon, founder of Clever Cards. Keelan is a serial entrepreneur. He sold his first company at 30 with enough money for many lifetimes. But he is a player of the infinite game. And he's now set up Clever Cards, which aims to revolutionize the online payments space. This is his story. But first, quick thank you to my partner, Iconic. I've got a massive ambition for this podcast. I want to make this the number one business podcast in the world. If I'm going to do that, I've got to be world-class on every single level. And that includes having a world-class studio, which I now have at Iconic Offices, The Green Room. It's an incredible space. I first recorded here with my live pod back in June, and I loved it. And get this, it's publicly bookable. That means you can go online and book it right now. As I said, it's called The Green Room. It's a private cinema and screening room. That means it's perfect to wow a client with a pitch, host a private screening, or do what I do, record a podcast here. So, as I record here, and as you know, I'm a member of Iconic Offices, I've got the team at Iconic Offices to hook us up with a number of exclusive complimentary office trials and discounts for my audience for booking this exact space. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description, grab the offer that works best for you. Thanks, Iconic Offices. The Wealth Summit is on the RDS on November 15th. It's for entrepreneurs, business owners, and those that aspire to be. If you're at the startup, scale-up, or sell-up stage of the entrepreneurial journey, then the Wealth Summit is for you. Learn how to build personal and business balance sheets through business growth strategies and build out critical paths to financial independence. Join Stephen Bartlett, Niall Quinn, Mandy Hickson, Tom Gannon, and 30 other speakers for a day of empowerment, motivation, education, growth, and networking. And we have an exclusive offer for listeners of the pod. For €150 plus VAT, you're going to get a discounted Access All Areas ticket, which also gives you access to the Wealth Tribe lunch, and it gives you a free masterclass on November 16th on how you can actually implement AI into your business. It doesn't even end there. The first 10 people to sign up by September 15th will get a ticket to the 10X Growth Camp in Luchterstown Castle on September 29th, where you'll deep dive into business growth strategies, financial growth strategies, and AI implementation for growth. So click the link below to avail of this incredible offer. Keelan, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much.
We finally get to sit down.
Indeed, indeed.
Welcome. What does Clever Cards do? I think we'll get that out of the way first. That's always the question I nearly forget to ask people.
Yeah, sure. So, well, Clever Cards is a digital payments platform that enables anyone, anywhere, anytime to be paid instantly. And how we do that is we enable businesses to issue what we call configurable digital MasterCards to their employees that is for either the employee's benefit. So, you know, like the €1,000 tax-free thing that businesses can give employees. And what's coming out shortly is a configurable business expense card, like a corporate card for corporate expenditure, but it can be restricted for certain use.
Clever. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I get it. Okay. So the gift card, talk to me about that first, because I think let's just flag that first, because a lot of businesses don't actually realize what's available.
I think it's probably the biggest secret in Ireland. It still amazes me that, you know, the government put all of this effort into, you know, enabling every single business in Ireland. There's something like 250,000 businesses in Ireland, and there's over 1.5 million employees in Ireland, and every single one of those, from directors to managers to every member of staff, an employer can give an employee up to €1,000 tax-free on a digital Clever Card. It's tax-free for the employee. It's a tax write-off for the employer. It's money for all rope, and everybody should be doing it.
But it used to be 500 quid, and I used to revel every Christmas with like 500 quid tax-free, because as an entrepreneur, like we've masses of entrepreneurs listening, like it's bloody hard to get your money out, right? You've earned it, and it can be damn hard to get it out of the business.
Yeah, and it's just completely frictionless. I mean, there's lots of other tax planning that you can get into that's very sophisticated and costs money. But this is as simple as, you know, get onto a website, order the cards, and, you know, you've got a digital MasterCard in your phone. You can spend it anywhere in the world.
I think that's the key as well. It used to be like you'd only spend in certain places. I'm like, how am I going to spend 500 quid in this place now?
Yeah. Well, that's how we've disrupted the market. I mean, it's the same the world over. There's lots of different, you know, cards that are restricted into certain retail networks and things like that, etc. But we've got a digital MasterCard that works online, in store. It's Apple Pay, Google Pay enabled. And we can see where people spend it. You know, I mean, so, you know, people will pay their motor tax with it. People will book flights and holidays with it. People will spend it in China. People will use it all around the world. So, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's the ultimate no-brainer, right? It's very rare in business. You can go, no, it's genuinely a no-brainer. Like €1,000 out of your business every year.
Yeah,
it's class. Yeah. How did you come up with that idea though? Because it's quite specific and quite niche.
I suppose the backstory to it is that I was over in China. I was on a trade mission with Enterprise Ireland, which is the enterprise board for Indigenous Irish companies that are looking to expand overseas, and with IDA Ireland, which is the one that brought all the multinationals into the country. And that trade mission, we were meeting with Tencent, which owns WeChat in the United States, in China. And when I was over there, though, you know, having spent 2 weeks, I didn't see one single person use a plastic card. Mm. Absolutely everybody used their phone to pay and tap their phone.
When was this?
This is about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm. And so it was so stark. You know, you didn't really need to be a Steve Jobs to have that inspiration to see, or that vision at least, as to the way the world is changing. And it's interesting when it comes to financial services and payments, digital technology adoption in China and the Far East is way, way, way ahead of where it's at in Europe, which in turn is way ahead of where it's at in the United States.
Which is weird, right?
Yeah, normally, you know, like you go across pretty much any category, the United States is known for, you know, Silicon Valley for its technology and what it's done. But when it comes to financial services, look, I think some of it is because the embedded systems that are there. So if you've got legacy systems in place that have been built up over 30 years, you know, you've got from a CEO of a bank all the way down to whoever is going, you know, I'm afraid to plug that plug out, because if I plug it out, I don't know what's going to happen. The lights go off.
Does anyone know what that server does?
Yeah.
No, but don't plug it out.
Exactly. And so when you're, you know, so as a result, it's harder for them to digitally transform organically. And hence a lot of those are looking towards, you know, newer fintechs like Clever Cards to acquire the new platform.
It's wild, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you reckon it's because of the whole cash, what would you even call it? The cash ethos. Everything is cash, tips. Everything is wired around a cash economy over there.
No, I don't. I don't think so. I think why financial services and payments in particular in the United States, it's more kind of the legacy infrastructure.
Really?
You know, it's the
banking,
fact that,
is it, or what do you mean?
It's banking, and like if you go to a restaurant, you know, the point of sale system might be integrated with the stock control system, and it's on an old green screen that, you know, so to actually go and move that into contactless is costly. And there's just so many players in the ecosystem in that people don't realize. It's not just you and the bank. There's multiple players in between. So trying to get change made within financial services is incredibly difficult.
Which is wild when it's the home of Silicon Valley, right? It kind of always blows my mind how the States is a lot years ahead of us in a lot of things, but certain things you're kind of going, why do they still do it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I was there in December, and, you know, went to go into a restaurant to tap up my phone, and the guy was looking at me going, what are you doing? And I actually didn't have my cards with me, because I don't carry cards anymore. Now, I had them back in the hotel, as it turned out. So I actually had to get the guy who was with me to pay. And, you know, they printed out a Visa receipt and he signed it, and, you know.
That thing.
Yeah.
I was there a few years ago and did the old sign. I was like, not use PIN, no? And they're like, no, you have to sign for it. I mean, like, wow, the fraud on that must be absolutely astronomical.
Exactly. And then it's not even just that, but, you know, fraud leads into regulatory issues. And, you know, there's a lot of companies across Europe that are still stuck in that plastic world, whether it's, you know, there's some companies in Ireland that you know, their gift cards are only magnetic strip.
Mm.
So it's not chip and pins, and not everyone's going to accept them. So in Europe, we've definitely moved on where everywhere is contactless. So more and more, you know, if you go in with a plastic card, It won't work, you know, because if it's magnetic strip only, it'll have to be a chip and pin. But of course, Clever Cards just goes over the top of all of that because it's Apple Pay and Google Pay enabled. So absolutely everywhere accepts it, whether it's online or whether it's in store.
Apple Pay is the closest thing we have to magic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bananas. You don't feel like you're spending money, which is probably good and bad.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting you make that comment. I mean, you know, what you're doing is you're bringing a frictionless experience. So in the case of employee benefits, which is where we started out, as employers gave employees cards, it was frictionless to put in the phone. You can put it in, it's all done within 60 seconds to get a MasterCard. You know, I mean, just compared to a bank, it could take you, you know, 5 months. Compared to the gift card companies, it could take you a month to get them plastic cards ordered, delivered. You know, how do you distribute 3,500 plastic cards if you're a big company? You know, it's a nightmare. Whereas you just,
I had to write a letter to AIB this week.
There you go.
I had to write a letter to change my address.
Yeah.
I went into the bank last week, where I have the branch, and I was like, I need to change the address.
Yeah, and I think you know, the banks are aware of it. So, you know, it's unfair for us to be critical of a Bank of Ireland or an AIB, because I can tell you it's worse with, you know, a NatWest, a Barclays and some of the guys in Europe and the United Kingdom. And they know they've got legacy systems and that they need to move to digital transformation. It's very difficult to do organically.
I'm sure it is. I know they're aware of it, but you're kind of going, the guy was like, you have to write his letter. I was like,
yeah.
Can I write it right now? And he goes, no, you have to sign a wedding and you need to do this. And I was like, oh my Lord.
Yeah.
But I think there's a real danger there, but it was a massive opportunity for you. I think there's a real danger for those legacy players to, their lunch gets eaten by a Revolut or an N26 or a Clever Cards.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we don't really see ourselves as competing with the banks. We think we're complementary to them because we're effectively bringing that digital transformation layer that they don't have. You know, there's a number of the major Irish banks use Clever Cards for their staff. That's the irony of it, okay? Mm. Because they can't issue configurable cards themselves. So the major banks are actually using Clever Cards. So, you know, all 8,000 staff have a card on their phone. And you know, I think they're aware of it. And as I said, it is very, very difficult. It was difficult for us, let alone for you know, a very large institution to do it.
As a nimble small operator coming into the payments and financial space, like, it must be greenfields.
Yeah, it is. And you know, look, you know, we've hired, you know, our head of regulatory and compliance comes out of SumUp, which is a big fintech company. You know, she's a lawyer qualified in Brazil, then Portugal, and then in Ireland, you know, plus an MBA while you're at it. So, you know, we've hired very, very smart people, but, you know, what we're doing is going right back to the core. So let's go right back to whether it's anti-money laundering legislation or whatever it is. Let's go right back to understand what is the regulatory requirement, and then bring technology to bear on that to say, okay, well, you know, if we lock cards to phones, you know, if we do liveness tests and we scan passports and we do all the KYC, et cetera, but you do it in a way that it is a slick user experience, but completely compliant, and makes it even more difficult, you know, because let's face it, if I give you a plastic card with money on it, you could just give it to the next guy. So I can KYC, which means know your client. I can do the anti-money laundering on you, but if you hand the money, hand the card to somebody else, it's like cash. Whereas with Clever Cards, you can't do that. It's locked to your phone. You know, you can certainly give it to somebody else, but then they have to be KYC'd for the card to work. So there's an awful lot that you can do with biometrics. You know, like, we literally use the company that that does all the passport offices around the world. That's a core component part. We've built around it, but that's a core component part of what we've done on it. So it's about taking, you know, the regulation and the legislation and applying technology on top to make it for a beautiful user experience.
It's incredible to be able to start from the end and work backwards, whereas a lot of them are kind of like going, well, we're stuck with this. So we need to kind of start. We don't know where to start.
Yeah.
How did this come about, though? Because it's quite an unusual idea. It's obvious now, considering the climate we live in, but how did it come about?
Well, I suppose, you know, go back to that trip to China, you know, I'll be honest, I was ignorant of China. You know, if you asked me to name the top 10 companies in the States, I could probably do it. China, I couldn't. We're just not as informed as to what's going on in the East. My mind was blown when, I mean, literally, I did not come across one single person using a plastic card. And, you know, if I go back to way back in my career, you know, I was on the board of a very large company, $8 billion company with 35,000 employees, and I headed up M&A, and we acquired the company that invented the DVD case. So I'm going to go back now a few years.
The DVD case.
DVD case.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And so it was when it was evolving from, you know, lots of your listeners now know what I'm talking about, but it was evolving from a VHS format to a DVD format. But the point being that video content was on a circular piece of plastic that we used to call a DVD until a crowd called Netflix came along and built a digital platform for movies. Music was on a circular piece of plastic called a CD until Steve Jobs said, I can put 1,000 songs into a phone. And hopefully someday people will say there used to be this rectangular pieces of plastic that we used to call debit and credit cards until this crowd, Clever Cards, came along and put it into the phone. So really, it's building what Netflix did for movies or music we're doing for payments, making it as easy and the same configurability. I've got a wish list on Netflix, or I've got genres on Netflix. It's the same concept that we've brought to payments. So if you're a CFO, you can say, well, look, can I configure a card that'll only work, you know, for ads? Can I configure a card that'll only work in petrol stations? Can I configure a card that'll only work for an AWS bill? Can I configure a card that'll only work in one retailer? Can I configure a card that'll expire next Friday? You know, and we've brought all of that to bear on a platform that essentially turns the CFO into the banker. So it's not now ringing the bank to say, can I get a card that they say, well, it's plastic, it's a 5-year expiry, and here's the credit limit. And going, well, can I not configure it? So we've delegated that to make it really easy for the CFO office to have complete control over payments before they happen.
Brilliant. I really, really like that. I'm just going to switch your cable, actually. It was only when I put my cards onto my phone that I was like, oh, this is different, because we get so many advancements in tech and they're all kind of like marginal. The next iPhone is marginally better than the last. But when you put your cards onto your phone, and it sounds so simple to say, just boop, paid. You talked about it there earlier, removing friction. That is the key, I think, in modern life, because people are so used to everything being so easy now.
Yeah, and I think there's look, I could talk all day for it and I won't, but I think, you know, there's a few call outs. I think people want not just friction removed, okay? And, you know, if you're a HR person or if you're a general manager of a small business and you've got somebody in the other part of the country and you want to be able to instantly send them money with, you know, €1,000, €250 on it, I can do it now in 10 seconds. You literally send the card, go straight to it to them by email or WhatsApp, and they've got a card on the phone in 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. So that is frictionless for the person who's initiating the payment out. It's frictionless for the employee that can walk straight in and spend it online or in store. And then lots of other things when it's in the phone, to your point. I mean, the concept of a plastic card, I mean, that €50 limit, it's different in different countries. But, you know, the reason being, if you drop that card, that plastic card, and you know, somebody can continue to tap, you know, five times and they can leak on your account. But, you know, once on a phone, if I hand you my phone now, you know, your face doesn't look like my face, so you're not going to be able to get in. You know, there's lots of security checks that are in it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. We've got security checks in the background. So yeah, it's frictionless. And then, you know, I would also say that from a fraud point of view, and from an anti-money laundering point of view, that's coming in like a ton of bricks in behind, you know, so anyone that's in that space, you know, the regulators are picking up on them. So Clever Cards has overcome all of that problem by using the technology to make it bulletproof, you know.
The Financial Times had a beautiful article, I think it was this Saturday, about that website. It's on the dark web. I can't even remember what it's called. The Act is basically a marketplace for stolen information.
Yeah.
And they were saying it's so big now that there's websites dedicated to... Two criminals obviously can't trust each other, so they have a website that they put the stuff into storage, and then Keelan goes off and tries, oh, working great, thanks, Jimmy, hands him over the money, and then he goes off and uses all that stolen information. And then they were saying the US is the biggest avenue for that.
Yeah, and there's another thing just now that you've brought up that topic, not to get too complicated and keep it really simple, okay, but there's a concept called tokenization. So, you know, some bright spark, you know, 50 years ago, came up with the idea of 16 digits, 4921770, whatever, an expiry and a CCV, right? And, you know, there's a lot of permutations and combinations to try and guess that number, okay? So that was a good idea at the time. But the problem is that if you use that plastic card, those card numbers are in the coffee shop, the pub, they're on the airline sites, it's the same numbers that are traveling everywhere. So, or you may even have written the number down into your phone somewhere, okay? Once a criminal gets a hold of that, okay, that's you compromised. If you go to a car park, as happened to me before in Italy, and I put a plastic card in, okay, it was scammed. And next minute I got a phone call, you know, later on the next morning, it was the next morning I got the phone call to say, was I in Florida? I was going, no, I'm in Italy. So the number had already been sold and scammed, okay? When it comes to the phone and tokenization, what we've done, okay, think of it instead of being a 16-digit number, that's scrambled and tokenized into think of a 100-digit alphanumeric number. And more to the point, when I tap that at the point of sale, it scrambles. So it will work for that transaction, but the next time round, there's a different number.
Amazing.
So the numbers are changing all the time, which means you can even if someone was to get that number in a retailer and say, well, I've got a token here, you know, it's impossible. Okay. So that concept of tokenization that we've brought in on top of our card. So our cards are tokenized, which brings that layer of security.
Is that the future of payments? Is that a broader movement?
Yeah, I think that's tokenization has been applied in lots of different sectors, but in terms of how we've brought it to the payments category, in terms of, you know, anyone that gets one of these employee rewards, as an example, at Christmas time, it's tokenized, where nobody in the marketplace is doing that. They're doing, you know, 16 digits and a CCV, or it's a voucher or something with a voucher number. So it's you know, once somebody gets their hands on that, you're in trouble, you know?
I met an Irish guy who's a cyber security firm, but they do preventative security. So they're trawling the dark web and the deep web and all the webs for all this information that's already leaked. What they do is they gather it up and they go to you and they go, did you know? So he was telling me a great story. He was asked to come in and speak to, I won't say where or how, he was asked to come in and speak to a large body in the education space. And it was all staff and faculty there. And he'd gone on and found 10,000 bits of their data that was available online.
Yeah.
And he started his talk with that. And I was just like, oh my God, what a way to start a talk.
Yeah.
But it's only when you speak to people like him. They did an example of whereby they had a reader outside a department store, and they were picking up on all the people walking in and out and showing the example of how leaky your data can be and how leaky your contact list can be. Like, it's a wild space at the minute, isn't it? So like, to see people like you coming into it and doing it a different way, it's really interesting, because I think, to be honest, I was very, very ignorant of it until I met him, and I was like, oh my God, it's kind of one of those things you kind of put to the back of your mind.
Yeah, because it's dark web. That's what it is. And people don't realize that if I'm walking around with a piece of plastic and 16 digits and, you know, it's wild open, you know, it's kind of like having your in the old days, having your wallet open with your numbers exposed, you know, whereas that isn't the case when you do what we do with biometrics and everything else in tokenization.
So when you went to China, you saw this, that was the kind of aha moment. What were we on the trade mission for? What were you there working on?
Well, it was with, as I said, it was with IDA Ireland and Enterprise Ireland, and it was, you know, bridging relationships between China and Ireland and tech companies in Ireland and tech companies in China. So a previous version to Clever Cards business that I've been, that I had was in the digital greeting card space, and this company was looking at getting into that space. So that was really the rationale and the reason for going there. But as I said, you know, it was a no-brainer. And when I came back, I said, I'm going to build a payments platform, a digital payments platform. I'm going to do what Netflix did, and I'm going to do that for payments.
Ambitious. That's a big goal. Came back with some big dreams there from China.
Yeah, and that was it. And I said, this is doable. I could see it. I could see the demand. I could see. And then as I began to think it through a bit further, I was going, oh, you know, it's a bit crowded. You know, there was the Revolut and the N26s and the Moneys, and, you know, there was a lot of businesses like this that, you know, the early neobanks were coming into it. So kind of went cold on the idea for a few weeks, and then penny dropped. I said, nobody's doing this for businesses. This is a blue ocean, wide open. Nobody has done it for business. And more to the point, the concept of bringing digital cards into phones and whatnot, et cetera, those very neo-consumer banks have educated the market.
Yes.
So coming in off the back of that meant there was a friction point that was removed. And essentially that's what we did. We created the ability for a business to digitally issue cards to their employees.
So did you hard left away from the greeting cards business then? You were just like, when you were in China, where you're like, okay, we need to stop everything. Like, how did you transition? Because that seems like a big swing.
Well, it was a complete swing, because actually what happened, and it's a lesson in entrepreneurship as well, is that, you know, we had one single point of dependency and failure in that earlier business, which was Facebook. So we were very, very reliant on Facebook in terms of an API connection that we had. And we got too big. You know, we were up to the point where we had 500 million people on a social graph. So we were a quasi-social network at that stage. Wow.
What were you doing?
Digital greeting cards. So it's the ability for me to send you a digital greeting card that goes into your phone. And effectively, instead of a digital greeting card, it's now a digital MasterCard device, to use the analogy, okay?
But how did Facebook impact that?
So Facebook would give us a feed. So, you know, we were able to understand who your closest friends and family were from Facebook. So we could send you, hey, Gary, it's, you know, Keelan's birthday on Friday. That was a critical part to it. And, you know, overnight, Facebook pulled the plug on the API for anybody.
Really?
As they got bigger and threw their muscle around more. So you kind of...
When was this?
Over 5 years ago. And So, you know, and you're conscious always in business that you've got single points of failure. The important things to have, you know, a mitigation plan against them.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. Now you had Airbnb. Before COVID, Airbnb, everything was built on Airbnb. Our entire market was the tourism sector.
Yeah.
And then that stopped. Now, look, COVID is a black swan.
There's always going to be, you know, you can't plan for wars. You can't plan for, you know, for COVIDs, right? There are certainly things that are, you know, real left field, okay? If you plan for every single, you know, redundancy and every single risk, you won't be able to move it forward. So you need to zone in on the ones that are the highest probability and manage for them, you know.
But what happened with the API? How did you hear that was coming? Because that sounds like
Facebook
one of those words.
Facebook wrote to all the developers and said, we're pulling this API.
How long did you have to...
Probably, I can't remember now. I think it might have been 3 months at the time. I can't remember. And but it was fortuitous because, you know, now we'd Facebook Mark II, which was the biggest player in China. So it was bigger than Facebook. As a matter of fact, this company owned a business like Facebook and like Uber and like WhatsApp, you know, together. So, you know, it was a monstrous organization. So it would have given us the equivalent in the Eastern market. But as I said, you know, a far better business was financial service. Financial service was broken. You could see it. Mm. And to be honest with you, I much preferred overall my career B2B businesses. They're far more resilient. Consumer is difficult. There's a guy called Dan O'Reilly. I love him. He's a behavioral economist. And, you know, there's actually one of our investors in Clever Cards is an economist. And, you know, he said to me one day that every single textbook that's ever been written on economics is flawed. Because what happens is, you know, it's kind of it's the following the herd mentality. And, you know, consumer behaviors are irrational. And people make decisions because, you know, he's doing it, so I'll do it. Or he's going to the conference, so I'll go to the conference. And you know, the actual economics of it, you know. And we saw everything through the crash in Ireland. You know, that guy's bought the house, so I buy the house. And, you know, the property prices go up and up and up and up. And all of a sudden, there's a crash, you know. So
I only literally said that to someone this morning. Like, we still don't. Human nature is wild. It's like the minute, right? During COVID, you know, share prices are always going to go up. Now, the bad times are here. They're always going to have inflation. Everything's always going to be getting more expensive. And you're like, we still think everything lasts forever in that moment.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Consumer behavior is unpredictable. And you know, as I said, I love that guy, Dan O'Reilly, because he's done a lot of things to prove that point out. You know, everything from loss aversion, there's lots of different parts to it that, you know, we've adopted into the business. And, but, you know, on the other side, businesses are rational. So businesses make rational decisions, and it's much more stable. So going back to your earlier question, you know, moving into the B2B space, in payments was a really much more attractive opportunity than going into the consumer space.
Talk to me about how you did that, because I think after COVID, there's a lot of businesses, I think, where you were, they've kind of looked at their business model now after COVID and it's not quite what it once was, or maybe they've kind of reevaluated and went, are we playing the game on hard mode here? So how did you transition? Because that's, I think that's a really interesting stage, probably very difficult for you, but a really interesting stage of the entrepreneurial journey, because a lot of people don't really talk about it. They kind of just go, oh, and then we got to here. But how did you actually manage that transition? Because I assume you had a lot of moving parts from your previous business.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was kind of effectively shut down. There's very few similarities, if any, between the old and the new, right? So it was effectively a clean start. You know, MasterCard has been fantastic. You know, MasterCard was a key partner for me in all this, and navigating my way through that organization and, you know, ending up with a 5-year agreement with MasterCard. MasterCard supports the business. But the bit that was extremely difficult is the amount of parties and parties that are dependent on the next party. That was the bit that was incredibly difficult. So
break that down for me. What do you mean?
So, you know, there's multiple different vendors within the industry and stakeholders within the industry. So, you know, you've got everything from, if I kind of talk at a very high level, Clever Cards is like a digital bank. Okay, so we can safeguard money. So the money is held, it's 100% protected, it's safeguarded in any country in Europe, okay? So we're a pan, I won't call it a bank because it's not a bank, and I want to make that very clear. But just for listeners, in an analogy terms, it's like a digital bank. Yeah. So we can hold that money where it's 100% safeguarded. Unlike a bank, by the way, where you might have a deposit guarantee scheme up to 75 or 100,000, okay? This is completely protected, okay? So the funds are completely protected. Sitting on that bank, and that's a pan-European situation. So if you take the Irish banks, they can bank you in Ireland, UK, but they can't bank you in France, okay? Where Clever Cards can do it all over Europe. That was the foundational layer. And comes with that is all of the regulatory anti-money laundering side of it, etc. Sitting above that, we did a deal with MasterCard where we have the ability to issue MasterCards in every country in Europe. So if an employer has an employee in France or in Spain or Poland, we can issue them with a card anywhere in Europe, okay?
How did you get that deal with MasterCard? Because obviously they're one of the biggest players in the financial world, not just here in Europe.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it was working my way through the relationships, you know, Ireland, London, Italy, you know, Belgium, it was working it through the whole way through. And certainly was challenging because, you know, you were a startup and like it was, I suppose I sold on the vision and, you know, it took time. It took time to sell the vision in on the one hand. On the other hand, MasterCard is an extremely forward-looking organization. Like I've been super, super, super impressed in terms of how far forward they're looking. They are looking 10 years forward. Mm. MasterCard knows that, you know, DVDs, you used to get them in a physical branch network called Blockbusters that no longer exists, and it's all network.
For our younger listeners, they're like, what's a Blockbuster? Yes, or Extravision? Like Extravision, keeping it local.
Yeah.
And Extravision and Nina, tell you, used to be the spot to be, now they're gone. Yeah,
So it's a branch network.
MasterCard don't want to be the Extravision of payments.
Yeah, and it's not them, but they know that the distribution, where do you get a MasterCard today?
Yeah.
A bank.
Yeah.
Branch networks. So they know where it's going. They know it's going to end up in a digital environment. So, you know, while I might have been one step ahead, they were two steps ahead and going, Clever Cards, you know, Keelan, I know exactly where you're going with this. And by the way, we see it in East as well. So that was a big coup to get MasterCard. And then we integrated directly into them. So that took the guts, I'd say, of 3 years by the time we'd everything finished.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, it's...
So you started from fresh. Were you essentially doing a brand new startup? Start day fresh. One, day zero from
fresh,
everything?
Fresh, yeah.
Did you have to raise cash?
Yeah, so we raised capital. And so we got institutional capital, and we have a lot of very successful Irish, probably, you know, if you go through the top 15 of the most successful entrepreneurs in Ireland and the wealthiest people in Ireland, I'd say there's 10 of them that are investors in Clever Cards.
Your name does pop up on the back of the Sunday Times quite a bit.
That was a good thing or a bad thing. I suppose if I go back, you know, one name that was published and I didn't publish it, they published it, was the Smurfit family. And in my very first business, I did a buyout when I was 25, raised institutional capital in London at that stage. So I raised private money, private equity in London. And I raised senior and mezzanine debt from Irish banks at the time.
What does that mean?
So the debt is the debt to buy the business and the
senior mezzanine. Second. What does that mean? Just for people learning finance.
Yeah, sorry. So senior debt is kind of a typical loan that's repaid over 5 years. Mezzanine is a little bit more expensive, where there's no capital repaid. It's only repaid at the end of the 5 years, but it's a higher interest rate. So just to keep it simple, okay.
Yeah.
So at the lower level, you're paying back the loan over 5 years. At the mezzanine level, you're not paying it back until year five, but it's a higher rate of interest. And then sitting on top of that's the equity, where they're taking a stake in the company. Okay. Mm. The private equity institution that gave me that money when I was 25, I'm 53 now, the two partners of that institution back in London are personally investors in Clever Cards today. The guy that gave us the debt and the mezzanine He subsequently went on to sell his company to KKR. He's invested in Clever Cards today. When I went to sell the company, the underbidder was Smurfit, and the Smurfit family are investors in Clever Cards today. And that's probably what's happened as I've moved through my career, is that I've made money.
Why is the ophology?
I think integrity is an extremely important part, okay? Entrepreneurship, they want to back the next generation of entrepreneurs. These are guys that, I mean, when I look back, you know, someone joked with me at one stage. I mean, I sold that first business, which was a pharmaceutical packaging business, for 20 million. Okay. There are entrepreneurs in Ireland, and take even the Smurfit, as someone quipped with me one day, because I sold it to Midwest Veko, which was a same size as Smurfit Kappa. Midwest Veko had 35,000 employees and 8 billion in revenue. Someone said to me one day, he said, the only difference, Keelan, between you and Michael Smurfit is you sold the business for 20 million with one entity. Michael Smurfit built up that business to 35,000 employees. And it's an incredible story as to what, and that was back in that era, never mind Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
You know, for and that's not just them. There are numerous Irish entrepreneurs that, I won't say numerous, but at that level, there are a few of those entrepreneurs. There's another entrepreneur that we have that's got an $8 billion business kind of in that space as well. You look at what the airlines have done, you know, I think Tony Ryan and what Michael Leary and the Reiner family have done. You know, I mean, there are numerous families like that in Ireland that have done incredible things. They've made an awful lot of capital. And I think they're backing the next breed of entrepreneurs to say, listen, it's doable.
We have a pedigree in Ireland. People I get this question all the time. Are you going to run out of guests soon? I'm like, Ireland is one of the most entrepreneurial countries in the world. Yeah. I said, I haven't even scratched the surface yet. We're coming up on 300 episodes. I haven't even scratched it yet.
Yeah.
And there's new entrepreneurs coming through all the time.
And whatever the new ones, it's the ones that I think sometimes people forget about.
Yes.
The largest fruit and vegetable distributor business in the world, Dole PLC, was an Irish business out of Drogheda. The largest airline in Europe is out of Ireland. One of the largest packaging companies, Smurfit, is out of Ireland. Arda is the largest glass bottling business in the world out of Ireland. Like, you know, aviation leasing, if you look at what Avalon did.
Right across the thing here, right across
that,
the green.
And that was a spin out of Tony Ryan's GPA, you know, the guys that were in there. So you're right. I mean, Ireland really has, certainly, you know, when you look at the legacy players, that it is incredible. Because I actually think it's harder then to build a global business than it is now. It's easier now, in my view, with technology and scalability.
I would agree, I think, because I'm a big believer. And the big part of why I do this podcast is, I think, to be it, you have to see it.
Yeah.
I'm a big, big believer in that because, you know, if you don't have people around you that are doing these things and pushing, you don't know what the level is. You think you're at level 10 and then you're like, oh my God. I talk about this with my friend James all the time. The next room.
Yeah.
There's always the next room.
Yeah.
Who's in the next room? What are they doing?
Yeah.
You know, what's Keelan and the lads up to in there?
I think, you know, there's the other thing that doesn't get enough time or airwaves is that, like, all this being said, in Ireland, there's 600 companies in Ireland that employ more than 500 people. That's all. There's 250,000 businesses in Ireland that employ less than 10 people. Every one of those are entrepreneurs.
Exactly. So, but it's wild, they don't see themselves.
And sometimes I feel awkward sitting in this chair as being the entrepreneur. There's 249,999 others out there that are entrepreneurs in this country. Yes, I suppose we've invented something and we've disrupted an industry, and that makes it different. I get that point. We've disrupted a financial services industry. We've invented a product and developed a product. But there's lots of people that have invented products within different ecosystems as well. So I think, you know, fintech is sexy, technology is sexy. But I think as a general topic, when you look at entrepreneurship, you look at the Irish, you look at the Irish record, and there's a lot of self-employed people.
It's a lot of pedigree, and I like the long-term view. I like that view. I think too much of business is short-term. We're always like on Twitter going, oh my God, he grew to this in 18 months.
Yeah.
That's not a fiction, but it's the outlier. It's the 0.0001, and they are billed as how it should be done, when in reality, it's people like yourself who over time graft, build a network, have pedigree, who have integrity, who build things that last and matter.
Yeah.
I think they're the things that we need to look at more, especially in Ireland, whereby it's a small community.
Yeah.
Right. We're generally one person away. It's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Generally in Ireland, it's the 1 degree.
Yeah.
So you're one person away from the Smurfits or the Tony Ryans or the Michael O'Leary's.
Yeah.
It's an incredible ecosystem. And that's why I like doing this podcast, because it's all about building these connections, these networks around Ireland, whereby people go, oh, I know Keelan. Oh, I actually can link that to this, to that, to the other. That's a great idea. I can do a spin-off version of this. I think so for people like you, that's why I love getting people like you on who've had that journey and who've had multiple chapters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Different chapters. I said it to you this morning. I think of these podcasts as just snapshots in time.
Yeah.
And hopefully when we're sitting here again in 5 years, we'll have another chapter.
Yeah.
There's a richness to it. Like there's a beautiful story and a narrative. This podcast is all about narrative.
Yeah.
It's all about sitting down and hearing your narrative and then going, brilliant. Okay, we're going to catch up again in 5 years and see where you're going. So bring me back to that kind of early stages of Clever Cards Mark II, we'll call it. Where do you even start? Because that's the bit, the 0 to 1, is always the friction that gets people.
Yeah. So, and it is difficult getting it. It's the, you know, the cold start problem is a really challenging one, right? And and the perseverance. Okay. So, you know, everyone knows going in to build something in financial services takes time. Okay. So it doesn't matter how fast you can run. If you're dealing with big, you know, ships on the ocean, that are going to be like a MasterCard or banks or otherwise, they take time. Okay. So you have to have had that experience to be able to professionally deal with very, very large organizations as speedily as you can. So for us, like building that infrastructure took a long time. It took 3 years is the honest answer to kind of get to the point of where we got to. And that basically meant, you know, hiring the brightest, the smartest, the most experienced, very diverse in terms of nature, intentionally so on my part. So, you know, there's definitely gray hairs in the business, and there's younger people in the business. And you know, some people have got experience, some people don't have experience. They've got very smart curiosity. And that got us to the point of where we'd built the infrastructure, okay? Once we built the infrastructure, then we start building the application layers on top. Then it was a case of, okay, now let's get to market with it. That's the moment where you're going, right, you know, well, you know, have you got product market fit, as they say in Silicon Valley? We'd no sales team, no marketing team. It was just me. I personally wrote the scripts for a radio ad. I personally rang a guy that I knew and said, can you get me an actor that can do the voiceover? I did it all, I'd say, in the space of 1 week.
What were you trying to do?
So we went out, this was employee benefits, that we went out to say, look, we've got a product here that we think, you know, just makes it a no-brainer compared to any other products on the marketplace. And we had thousands of businesses from the largest in Ireland to the smallest all signed up in the space of 8 weeks.
What?
And
from where? How'd you get them from not from the radio ad?
It was radio, it was social, but word of mouth went like wildfire. The amount of people, you know, we landed one of the very large banks. So there was, you know, 8,000 employees there. And I was at a party over Christmas and, you know, someone said to me, oh yeah. And I was telling my husband who works for such and such a business, you know, we got this card to work. And I was going, oh wow. So, and that's where we got that from then. Didn't realize that, you know, so it was word of mouth. So it went like wildfire, you know. It was extremely tough in that we didn't have a sales and marketing team. So, because the plan was to start investing in that in quarter one, which we've done. So we've really scaled up on that front. It was incrementally getting through. You're saying, you know, how do we get it started from zero? And the other side of it was that when I started, you know, there was no one source. It wasn't that I could, even MasterCard, it wasn't that I could go to MasterCard and say, how do we do the tokenization? Like, you know, how do we do the testing? You know, had to go to Apple. So there was, you know, you were kind of individually trying to pull all this together, which was new. You know, no one had done it before. So, you know, there wasn't a blueprint to follow, which made it, it was difficult. It was very, very difficult, I have to say, you know.
How do you, you kind of alluded to it there, it's experience, but you're driving a speedboat and you're trying to line up all these tankers with your speedboat and they all have to be in the same line at the same time for your speedboat to move forward. How do you do that? Because you make it sound relatively easy there, but it sounds incredibly tough.
Yeah, no, that's a very good analogy, actually, because you're going along on a speedboat and you meet the first anchor and going, there's just no point in continuing at, 70 kilometers an hour here because it's moving at 10. So you have to go at 10, maybe nudge it to 12, but, there's not an awful lot you can do. I mean, that's just, there isn't a magic formula. There isn't one to say, we didn't get the tanker to manage to move at 70 miles an hour, right? It went at 10. And if anything, it came back to 5 because they're going, oh, you're not a big tanker, are you not? You're just a small little speedboat. We're going, yeah. So it was right, okay, well, let's understand, what you've got. And so I think I go back to it, doing it right at the beginning, not taking shortcuts, making sure you've built that infrastructure the correct way round, and going through all of that testing that we had to do and certifications that we had to do with Apple and with MasterCard, and so the beauty of it was that drove you to a standard. If you weren't going to be certified by MasterCard, you weren't in the game. So we're certified by MasterCard, we're certified by Apple. So all of a sudden you realize we've now got an infrastructure where, as I said to you, we can hold money in Europe, we can issue cards all over Europe, we can process payments globally. So we can process payments globally. We're certified to within sub 1 second by MasterCard.
Wow.
So that's a huge, our infrastructure is way bigger than where we're at in sales and marketing at this point in time. It's a huge infrastructure, completely scalable because it's all digital, so.
I know it's incredibly tough, but even just listening to you there, you've built a moat a mile wide now. I mean, a lot of companies do it the other way around. They generally tend to overpromise and underdeliver, and then they're scrambling to try catch up, and then the whole system falls apart because in a great world, they have the same problem you had where the service takes off quite quickly and the whole thing just keels over because they're built on kind of a house cards.
I think there's 2 points you've made there. I think there's people that have keeled over because it's built on a house of cards, okay? And that definitely wasn't going to be something that, this is a long-term game in terms of what we want to build. And I mean that in the context of whether I own it or our investors own it or somebody else owns it, the business is in for the long-term, okay? So leave out who owns the share cert, so to speak, for a second. So the foundations of it had to be something that was long-lasting. So the fallover piece isn't there. Go back to the bit about the moat, and this comes up sometimes when, as we went through capital raises, people would say, so what's unique about your technology? I'm a big fan of Warren Buffett, and and I'm a big fan of Andreessen. Andreessen did a survey of 1,000 exits that they had. And in 1,000 exits, they reckoned there was only 2 of those companies that had the best product. They said that 998 of them won because they had the best distribution. And how many times have startups gone and said, oh, they have a crap product, we can build a much better product. And Andreessen will say, the problem is that particularly, and this isn't to cast aspersions on any particular type of background, but, a lot of technology startups would have been built by engineers that could build fantastic products. I'm a chartered accountant. And they'll build the best product. And particularly when Andreessen invests in a company, sure enough, the next player comes along and builds a better product, but doesn't get the distribution and fails. And what then happens? The number one player that had the crap product and the great distribution goes and buys it for a quid. Yeah. And now they've got the best distribution, the best product. So it's all about distribution when it comes to moat. And with Clever Cards, we've got 100% penetration in our customers. Every single employee in the business has got our card. The Irish banks can't say that. The international banks can't say that. And we've got mass penetration. So it's all about distribution. So we've effectively gone in and got distribution via corporates, which is very, very unique and is unbeatable. And then coupled on the back of that, where we've carried out KYC on individuals that are cardholders, et cetera. It means we've gone through the checks and the liveness checks and the passport checks and everything else, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the onboarding for subsequent products has been made slicker. So there's a lot under the hood that you wouldn't see, but really the moat, absolutely, it takes a hell of a long time to do what we did from an infrastructural point of view, but that's only one leg of a four-legged stool.
I think it's an Andreessen quote. Not 100% sure, but I think about it and I use it all the time. First time founders build products and focus on products. Second time founders focus on distribution.
Yeah, I think it might be. I think you're right. Yeah.
It's so obvious after the fact.
Yeah.
But people get obsessed about, we just built our product. I had Nick Keegan on a few weeks ago from Mail Metrics, and he said that was our problem. We built and built and built and built and released to the sound of crickets. And he was so open about it. And I love it. Same with Connor Murphy. I had him on from Dadhug like last year. And I think he was the most transparent founder I've had on. He was like, here are all the things we did wrong with Dadhug.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 bum. And here's how I'm going to build Bridge. Bum, 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 bum.
You
cannot be told that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's phenomenal when you see an elite founder who's taken all these lessons, not emotional about it.
Yeah.
They haven't got the ego about it, but they're like, look, this is
I think you need to live your mistakes, but you know, and it comes with age, I think, quite frankly. So, you know, when you make mistakes early on, you know, you don't make them a second time. And that's actually, it's not cliche, I can tell you, it's really, really true. And I think what it also does is, you know, I had a big success at a very early age, which can make you invincible. You think, you know, until you go and make a mistake, and then you go, wow, ain't invincible anymore. And that's why, you know, if I look at the investors that I've surrounded myself with, you know, they're generally older than me. And I can tell you, they are words of wisdom that I listen to very, very carefully. Mm-hmm. It's everything down to our interviews. As we interview people, you know, you can get so much in an hour's conversation with an employee. But if you go and talk to their boss or somebody that knows them, that's worked for them 3 or 5 years, you know, you need to listen. And I think there are founders that don't listen. And I think they'll fail, you know, so listening to the wisdom of those that have been through these things and taken that on board. So that's your point about, you know, the first time founder, second time founder. I think, you know, it's just listen.
Mistakes are only mistakes if you repeat them. I've thought about that a lot recently. Yeah, I was like, do you know what? And I've even changed it to like, I do like these weekly reviews and monthly reviews. And I was like, wins, losses. And I was like, wins, learnings. The internal narrative you're setting yourself up with when you say losses.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how did I lose? When you go wins and learnings. Because mistakes if you just keep doing it.
Well, you know, that's a culture in Clever Cards that we've ingrained with people. Look, you really can't make a catastrophic mistake. You know, if anything's going to be big enough, it gets escalated. You know what I mean? But there's loads of things that just execute on them. You know, get them out there, get it to the customer and understand from the customer. If the customer says, look, this really isn't meeting my need, you know, go and tweak it when you've got to, but get it out there fast to them and talk to the customer, because you really need to understand their need.
That's the biggest point I think I've got over the last 3 to 4 years in this podcast, is people releasing quickly.
Yeah.
Too many people build and build and build. Yeah. We've alluded to a few minutes ago, but like that point can't be stressed enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you balance that as a kind of a serious business? Like you're in fintech, it's a serious business.
Yeah.
You know, how do you balance that with the right friction point?
Yeah. I think there's certain levels in financial services that you can't release quickly. Okay. So when it comes to regulation, infrastructure, payment processing, all that kind of stuff, et cetera. When you get to the application layer and, you know, someone says, you know, I'd love a feature that can do X or Y, or somebody thinks this would be a great feature. I think at that level, it's where get it out fast, go and talk to the customer and listen to the customer. So I don't know how many times it's happened where, you know, it's really only when you talk to, and it goes back to, you know, and the whole team, we've ingrained it in terms of, you know, it does go back, and I often talk about it, you know, where Henry Ford met all those people, and, you know, and he said, what do you want? And they said, we want faster horses. And he kept the question going until he realized that what they really wanted, that was a solution.
Yeah.
But what they really wanted was to get into town faster. And he came back with a motor car.
I love that quote. It's one of my favorite quotes of all time.
And we do it. Like we listen very, like it's hard because a customer, a lot of times 9 out of 10, they'll tell you, this is what I want.
Mm.
And you just have to peel it back carefully with them so that they're comfortable to say, well, actually, yeah, what I really want is the following. Okay. And you'd say, well, I've got a solution that's 10 times better than that incumbent solution, you know, to your need, you know.
What does success look like to you, Keelan? Because you alluded to it there. What age did you have the first exit?
Well, I first sale. Was 25, 26 and sold when I was 30.
That's young.
Yeah, I was very young.
Oh, whoa. What does that feel like at 30? Like, what was the, you can give specifics or not, but what was the deal? How did you?
So it was, it was very successful. It was an all cash deal. I was, you know, it made me very wealthy. Certainly for my age relative to others at the time, you know, probably would have been well ahead in terms of what I'd done. And it, it was weird on another level, you know. You know, it was absolutely the driving goal to make capital and sell that business. Then you kind of say, what'll I do now? And that's when, you know, I got a call to say I would join the board of Mido Sveco. That was a huge thing career-wise. So that was more an activity rather than a, you know, and I said, yeah, okay, maybe I'll take this on, I'll do it. And that was really, really interesting, you know. So
you were 30 when you sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had your exit. What did that feel like? Because I'm fascinated by motivation among elite entrepreneurs. I'm fascinated by the drive.
Yeah.
Because I find it so interesting, because often it's not money. It's money to a point, and then beyond that, it's not. So after that, what was the feeling for you?
Like? Yeah, I think, look, there's no question about it. I'd be lying if I didn't say it was capital. Okay. So number one, that was a goal. Okay. Being successful on the exit outside of the money, so to speak, for a second, was also equally a goal, okay? So actually getting a very successful exit out of it, of the business, and leading up to that was building the business to that point to exit it, okay? So, and if I look at it now, you know, it's still the same thing. It's that, you know, to drive a huge exit. Yes, capital is extremely important, okay? But, you know, the stakeholders are the investors at large, not just me, okay? So, yes, obviously, I'm driven by capital, but I'm also driven by capital for all of the investors. You know, I will not feel like it's a very good outcome if they've just got a meh result, you know what I mean? So I really want to drive a very, very big exit. And then in terms of building the business, you know, I go back to it, like, you know, whether we own the share certs or somebody else owns the share certs, you know, we are building something here that, you know, will be here for good. So it's not that we're taking quick fixes along the way just to get an exit. We're building something that will have a sustainable future for businesses, you know, for businesses as it moves forward. So, you know, that's really, for me, what success will be like. Success will be like where we've solved this pain point, we've built it. Yes, it will be acquired by somebody at some stage, but there's a long road to go. I mean, you know, the payments industry is in trillions, not even billions. Okay, it is huge, and there's so much. You know, within financial services, it's a very profitable sector. Financial services, despite the fact that it's laden with massive costs. So technology can take all those costs out in a very, very profitable sector. And then, you know, the incumbent players in financial services are monstrous. And, you know, the market leaders that are monstrous are the ones that have built on legacy systems that now all have digital transformation plans. And it is very, very difficult. You know, we were with the CEO of one bank recently. He's only in the place, not even a year. Really, really nice guy. Was brought in from HSBC in Australia. And, you know, he said, Kim, I'm only here a year. He said, I'd be afraid to plug a plug out in here. Even if my CTO said, it's okay to plug it out, go on. He said, I'd be afraid. I don't know what's going to go down. Yeah. And I'm not going to risk it, you know. So what he was looking for was something that was cloud-based, like Clever Cards, that, you know, I know if we do this, I can service that end of the market. And, you know, I can bring customers onto that without having to pull out the plug. So it's a common problem. It's not, you know, people will slag Irish banks and things like that. It's not. It's a banking issue globally.
It's the ultimate high risk, high reward game.
Yeah. So venture is high risk. Okay. And high risk is in, you know, risk is quantified. I think, you know, from our point of view, you know, ultimately investment risk is about exit. You know, and I've learned a lot about that through M&A over the years and deals I've been involved in. And we're very fortunate that we're in a space where there's multiple buyers for this business. You know, there's multiple banks, there's multiple fintechs, there's multiple payment processors, there's multiple different outlets, there's multiple major accounting software businesses and payroll businesses that could use what we do into their employees. So, and they're all very, very large. So I think once you've got liquidity of buyers that are very deep pockets, you know, you're in a very, very good probability of outcome in terms of what the return would be on your investment. I think the risk is in terms of the journey on the way along that. Of course, there's always going to be hiccups. There's always going to be issues. It's about building a very, very strong team, you know. So we've built a very, very competent and strong leadership team to be able to execute in their own disciplines as we move this out. So I think, yes, there's risk. And there's a time factor to the invested amounts. But there's been some spectacular returns in the financial services space, spectacular returns, because ultimately the value of something like a Clever Card is always going to be infinitely more valuable to the acquirer than it is to us, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, putting Clever Cards into some other institution can transform them So there's a multiplier effect on it. So
it can be an accelerant. How do you balance this with your life? Because this sounds all-encompassing. How do you balance this with having a life?
Yeah, it is all-encompassing. I mean, there's no point in bullshitting about it, right? I mean, the reality of it is when you build an early stage business and you're starting it from ground zero upwards, it is all-encompassing. There's no other two ways about it. You know, for me, about 6 years ago, I got a personal trainer in every morning. You know, comes in 6:30, 6:45 every morning. You know, so it's kind of a case of get yourself physically in shape.
What sparked that?
I'm trying to think how I got him, actually. I can't remember.
Why did you get him, I guess, is a better question. Then.
I think... I can't remember actually. Was I out looking for one? I know there's a friend of mine was a personal trainer. And I think I might have said, "Look, that'd be a good idea." It was more. I can answer the question a different way. Is that after the first few weeks of it, I was going, "Wow, why didn't I do this before now?" You know, I mean, like, you know, getting into physically better shape. Okay, being aerobically fit, being stronger. So physically, okay. You know, that evolved into that, into him, you know, he's a nutritionist. So, you know, like, what did you have yesterday for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner? Didn't have lunch. Well, don't do that again tomorrow. You know, so all of a sudden nutrition and, you know, how was yesterday? I was knackered. Why were you knackered? What did you have for dinner? Well, I didn't eat till 10:30 at night. It's gone, look, hold on a second. You'd know fuel in the tank all day. It's gone, oh yeah, that's why I was knackered yesterday. So I never thought about those things, quite honestly. And all of a sudden then, through physical fitness, then all of a sudden you even realize mentally you're just way sharper, you know? And then I kind of thought, hold on a second, if I'm steering this ship and I'm going to drive this in a speedboat at 100 kilometers an hour, to use your point, you know, think of it like a professional athlete. You know, you're not going to run out into a rugby pitch if you're not fit. So I'm going to be physically fit. I'm going to be mentally fit. And even sleep, you know, you then say, like, what time do you know, I have a buzzer that goes off every night, come get to bed. I often don't make it, but, you know, I know that there's a certain amount of sleep. You know, when you don't have it, you're tired. You do have it, you're tired in that extra hour. So it's just trying to get as fine-tuned as you can.
There's an accountability piece there, though, as well, because you know you're accountable to one other person, which I think is very, very interesting.
Say it again?
You're accountable to yourself, number one, but you're also accountable to someone else. You have someone else holding you accountable, which I think is huge in any sort of journey.
Yeah, when you say holding accountability, I mean, no one asked me to get fit, right? So it was me doing it. But yeah. Like, you know, I did it for my family. You know, I didn't want to go and keel over. You know, not that it would happen or had any signs of it or anything or otherwise.
You never know, though.
I was always a very, very fit and sporting person. I've a responsibility to the team, you know, to drive, to be the one that's gone constantly on at 100 miles an hour, no stop, okay? A responsibility to the investors, you know, and a responsibility to our customers. You know, I don't want a situation that, you know, you kind of go, right, well, you know, we need to push this forward at an appropriate pace, you know? I'm not driving at 30 miles an hour, I'm driving at 100 miles an hour, and that's what we're doing. And the team are with me in driving at 100 miles an hour. So we're driving at 100 miles an hour and... you know, so fitness was one and then downtime, you know, I mean, it is sacrosanct bank holidays for me, you know, it's
just bank holidays.
Well, certainly bank holidays, because I do work hard. And so, you know, therefore, I really try and turn it on when it comes to, you know, switch off time off as best I can with bank holidays. And obviously, you know, summer and Christmas time as well with family become very, very important to counterbalance it. And
what else do you do to switch off? Because you seem like an extremely driven individual. So how do you switch off?
If you ask my wife, you'd probably get a different question to me, right? She'd probably say he doesn't switch off, okay? And that probably is the honest answer.
Okay.
I was convinced by a colleague of mine or a friend of mine that said to me, you'd be well able to cycle from Paris to Nice. And I laughed at him, which is 750 kilometers. And he said, it's for charity. So I picked a charity and said, okay, I'll do that. So I jumped in, bought the bike. And, you know, on the 1st of September or 2nd of September, so I panic when I think about it. It's only days away.
I'm saying it'll be magic. Look at you. You're the picture of health. I think Mr. Hayes, I know, talked you into that. He's actually going to be in the pod in a couple of months.
Oh, very good.
But like that's, you need goals, don't you? You need something else external to the business to be focused on.
And I think there's a social aspect to that as well. Mm. You know, it's a switch off. You know, it's not that it's always business. So there's just a mental cleansing, as well in that regard, where you're engaged with lots of different people and lots of different topics and everything else. So it's I think it's very important to get a balance. You like I probably need to try harder to fit in the counterbalance. You know, like in my diary, when I got the personal trainer, you know, I put in 6:45, to 7:45 every morning. Sorry, there's no calls, no anything else. So I didn't find myself putting things in there. Sorry, end of story, can't do it. Mm. And sometimes pub said, sure you can. I said, I'll tell you why I can't do it, because I've got my trainer coming in. I'm sorry. And, you know, you mightn't like the answer, but I'm sorry. That's just my position on it.
I'm a big believer in when people say, oh, I don't have time. I was like, no, it's not a priority.
Yeah, you're dead right.
And big believer in
that. I won't mention the name, but there's a, she'll know now who I'm talking about. There is one person who I'm cycling with at the moment that said, I couldn't do Wednesday nights, I'm too busy. And I was going, you know, up here,
yeah,
you know, you get out
not
there.
Fully
you're,
in.
When you're climbing Wicklow Mountains, I can tell you, for 3 hours on a bike.
I'd say you go past my house, like keep an eye out for you. I'd say you go past my house routinely.
You very quickly forget about business.
That's going to be incredible. Paris to Nice, that'll be phenomenal. That's in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We'll dive into our quickfire round. So we've got quickfire questions for you. What book would you recommend every entrepreneur read?
I have two answers. One of them is there's a book called The High Growth Handbook, which is published by Stripe. And it's kind of a series of short snippets from very successful technology entrepreneurs. I think it's an incredible read and an incredible reference point.
High Growth Handbook.
High
Interesting.
Growth Handbook.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, I've gone back to it a good few times. You don't have to read chapter by chapter. You can jump in and out. The other one that I'm often very, very inspired by is stuff on Tony Ryan and what he's done, because it's not just him. It's, you know, don't forget Dennis O'Brien, Michael Lear, they all worked, you know, Avalon guys. There was such a spin out from that organization. So,
yeah, I thought there's a Tony Ryan biography. It's phenomenal. What's something you didn't pay attention to early on in your career that you wish you had?
I would say backing my instinct. So, not so much in a positive sense, but in a negative sense. If you have a negative instinct, and you know you just say, look, this doesn't feel right. Well, then don't do it.
I heard a great analogy on that a few weeks ago. Someone was asked about, oh, you know, do you make the decision then or do you wait a while? And his answer was, when you're running a marathon, do you wait till mile 23 to take the stone from your shoe? It's like, yep, good analogy. I like it.
Yeah.
What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
Personal time.
What would you do today if I gave you 10 million euro?
Invest in Clever Cards.
It's kind of a cheat answer, but it's a very cliche and very, very kind of a cheat answer. What's something, I think we know the answer to this, what's something in your daily routine you wish had started sooner?
Yeah, probably personal well-being. I think so many people underestimate, you know, personal well-being, which covers very simply physical healthness, which leads to better mental healthness. I mean, anything negative, it just means sharper line of thinking. And sleep and just feeling better with yourself, and everyone's a beneficiary of it.
80-20, I'm a believer in it. I just said this has been my best year yet about health, because I do the simple things right.
Yeah.
We just had a baby, but I was like, do you know what? I owe it to her to be in the best possible version of myself mentally and physically. Gym, work on your mental health, work on your diet, work on your sleep. And that's it.
Yeah,
The basics. We're always looking for like, oh, what hacks? What you?
Yeah.
No. Just do the basics. Yeah. Doesn't matter what split you do in the gym. Just go to the gym for an hour.
Yeah,
if you do nothing, it'll be better.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you 1 million euro to invest. It cannot be in Clever Cards. What are you investing 1 million euro in?
MasterCard.
You really are a company man.
No, I mean, I'm being honest. I mean, people underestimate. If anyone looks at the numbers on MasterCard and looks at the growth that they've had in earnings, in size, in valuation, what they've done and how they've transformed, they've moved beyond a card company. It's an incredible organization by reference to any sector, whether it's financial services or otherwise.
If you had to start a new company in the morning, what would you start?
You're gonna slag me again on this one now, but probably would be in the financial services space somewhere. Like, it's such a big industry that it's very profitable. There's like, look at all financial services, no matter where you go, there's a lot of profit in financial services, but it's laden with very, very heavy costs that can be taken out with technology, and it hasn't digitally transformed. So I think there'd be somewhere in that space I'd still gravitate back towards.
Perfect. That's a big space. What do you believe that other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
I think what people sometimes might find strange or strongly disagree with is that I think the concept of saying to a mum or a dad with young children that you need to be in this office at 9 a.m., sit in traffic, find somebody else to drop off your kids because you need to be here at 9, is like, digging stuff. It's just so archaic. It's beyond joke. That doesn't mean I'm a proponent of everybody works from home, but I'm a huge believer in flexibility. And then, you know, ultimately, it's when you go to motivate staff and you go to remunerate them. People say, well, of course, you remunerate them with money. But, you know, an extra 2 days holidays or being able to come in at 10 or do an hour in the evening, like they, you know, understanding what the motivation is of somebody coming to join you, understanding it. Don't apologize for having young kids, or don't apologize for having, you know, soccer training at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday evening. Don't apologize for it. That's your life. And if I can motivate you around that, not just financially, but with a bit of flexibility, bang, you get what you want.
I love that. I'm a big believer. And I always used to say, you don't have to be sitting here at 9. You don't have to be sitting here at 5. If the work's done and my phone doesn't ring, once it's done, I trust you. It comes back to trust, right? What's the one thing in your personal life that you spend money on that dramatically improves it or you enjoy?
Holidays with my family.
Very good. What's your one final bit of advice to every entrepreneur listening?
I think for an entrepreneur listening, no matter what the sector is, I think listening to experience is worth its weight in gold. It's worth more than money. Because if you listen to someone who's had the experiences, positive and negative, and they can share that with you, wow, that's wisdom that, you know, you just can't pay for.
Really good. Keelan, where can people learn more about Clever Cards? Because there's a lot of businesses listening. Where can they learn more and sign up for this?
Yeah, sure. So if they go on to clevercards.com, simple as that. And certainly Irish businesses, I mean, I think you touched on it on the outset. It's a no-brainer for every single business in Ireland to go on and get a digital MasterCard, give it to their employees for up to €1,000. You don't have to give them €1,000, but whether you're the owner, the manager, the director, or you're your staff, it is a no-brainer that every company would do it, and you just email them to staff, they add it to their phone, qualifies for up to €1,000 tax-free.
Can you do that any stage of the year, or is there a specific
stage,
time?
No, you do any stage of the year, yeah.
Brilliant, especially coming up towards Q3, Christmas, Q4 now. Yeah. It's a brilliant time to do it. Yeah. Keelan, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Keelan. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Apple, Spotify, or YouTube, click subscribe. I'll see you back here in a couple of days.